How do you have blue hair?
Because it's so cold on the North Pole.
You haven't met anybody you didn't kill.
Well, I haven't killed you yet.
No fucking shit, lady. Do I sound like I'm ordering a
pizza? We all feel better.
We all feel better.
And now our featured presentation.
When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus, though I knew it was my dad. And I would hang up my stocking at Christmas, open my presents, and I'd be glad.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Oh, it's cold. Are you listening? Blood splatters. Can it glisten? I got nothing.
You surprised me. I thought you really had something there. I
got nothing.
Really? That was a lot better than what I had. Ho, ho, ho.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all of you out there.
For this, the first annual Christmas edition of Better in the Dark.
With my good friend Tom DJ.
And my brother from another mother, Mr. Derek Ferguson.
And in this episode, we're going to do something, you know, that we like to mix it up and do things a little bit different here. When we sat down and we conceived of the idea for an episode of Christmas movies, we said we're not going to do It's a Wonderful Life.
We talked about a whole list and we noticed something in common about a number of these films.
The strangest thing is that we found that there's a surprisingly significant amount of action movies that either take place on Christmas Eve or which are centered around the Christmas holidays.
So this, our present to you, our loyal listeners, is going to be a episode discussing some Christmas-themed action movies. But, you know, there are other presents involved here.
And what presents are those?
Well, Merry Christmas, Derek.
Oh, get out of here.
Interactivity, folks!
It's too early for this,
but
man.
But this is probably the last time I'll be seeing you between now and Christmas.
So I figured... I don't have anything for you.
Did I ask for something?
I gotta get you... Folks, I'm looking at what he got me here. Man, oh, man.
Derek has been doing this show with me since April, but he doesn't have an MP3 player himself. He's talked about that on the show a couple of times.
Yes.
So I figured I'd rectify that problem for
him.
Oh,
man, thank you so much. See, now I can't do the episode. I'm starting to tear up here, seriously. Oh, man, thank you.
Interactivity, folks.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's really thoughtful of you. Thanks,
don't worry about it. You know I love you like a brother, man.
Yeah, I love you too.
Before we get all mushy.
In a man type of way.
Hey, I know.
Let's get that out of the way.
That's right. Now let's go crush beer cans with our heads.
But now I can listen to some of these podcasts that you've been recommending to me, because Tom recommends, oh, you ought to listen to this, you ought to listen to that. The problem is that usually I don't have the time to do it, but now that I have this, I can record them and I'll have the time to listen to them. So thanks again.
You were talking about these podcasts. One of the things we want to say, this is going to be the last show to air that we're recording in the year of 2007.
We're recording this actually on December 5th.
December 5th.
You won't be listening to this until December 23rd.
Which is the Sunday before Christmas.
So this is going to be the last episode.
There's one more episode after this, but we already recorded that one. So this is the last one that we're recording that you're going to hear.
Dead right.
And one of the things that Derek and I have discovered, because we came from the fan fiction community, there are a lot of lovely people in the fan fiction community, but there are also a lot of people who are not so nice. And one of the things that we have discovered becoming a member of the Podosphere is that everybody has much love for everybody else.
It's a wonderful community.
Very supportive. And we wanted to take a few moments to thank a number of podcasters who have helped us out, given us input.
Support.
Yeah.
Just general love. They tell us all the time, oh, you guys are great.
You right.
The good work. They give us suggestions. They give us ideas. Mm-hmm. It's a very supportive community,
right,
in that everybody wants to make everybody else better. So
exactly.
Really nice.
I think probably some of the first people we want to thank is Chris and Jen from Amazing Spider-Cast. Tim Young from Contrast Podcast, who was giving me advice back when I was doing other people's toys. Brian Ibbett at Coverville, who has alerted us to what may end up being our new site.
And more on
next
that
year.
More on that later.
The guys at the Geek Savant, Dave, Super Ugly, Grant, everybody out there.
Who we're going to be doing
we
show.
Hope to,
we
yeah.
We hope to do a show soon.
Dave Devanch has suggested that we do a crossover episode sometime next year, and we're hopefully going to do that. We got one test. Speaking of somebody we are definitely doing a crossover with, let's not forget Parker of Bend the Media.
Oh, wonderful. wonderful podcast.
This guy, I don't know, do you think he would mind if we tell people how old he is?
I'm impressed with
his Let's doing, just say, the job given done. The age that Parker is, the fact that he produces such a incredibly well-done show...
The professionalism.
...is amazing.
I was so impressed with the professionalism of it. His first show was more professional.
Without a doubt.
He was more professional than four or five shows, actually. I called him up. That's how impressed I was.
The Joffrey Street Productions folks at Cool Shite on the Tube also deserve a lot of praise. Mike, Jen, James, and Desmond at Earth2.net. All of you guys...
John Drushi. Not forget him.
Of course. All of you guys have been very supportive. We know that you've got our backs, and we can't be more appreciative.
We cannot thank you enough for all of the kind of attention, consideration, praise, suggestions. I could go on and on and on, but then this will start to...
It just amazes me how wonderful this community is. Thank you, guys. You've made this first year of Better in the Dark so much easier and so much...
A lot of fun.
More enjoyable.
Yeah, a lot of fun, actually.
One of the person we forgot to mention, of course, is Eric and Kelly at Podcrawlers. Guys, get in touch with us. We're hoping if this works out with Geek Savant and with Parker, that we get crossover with you guys as well.
That's one of the things that we've got planned. We've got a lot of stuff planned for next year.
One of the things we can announce is that we still be doing the Doctor Who two-parter. It's just going to be early in the year.
Yeah.
Because life had other plans for us this month. And also, the next big series that we're going to be tackling, and this is pretty scary, we're going to be doing a series called Gilt Edge Bonds.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be looking at the James Bond series.
And the way we're going to do this is we're going to do this really in-depth, so we're going to do two films per episode. So that way we can cover everything that needs to be covered about every film in the series.
That's going to be one of our major, along with the DC at the movie.
And we're going to start that probably in August when the Batman film comes out.
Exactly. So you've got two major things. That's what you got to look forward to.
The Hulk episode will air next week. After we're done recording this, we will record the final. Yes, people, the final Marvel at the Movie segment.
Thank you, Jesus.
And we already have episodes for the new year. We're going to have a number of episodes focusing on some of our favorite actors, starting with a focus on your girl, Miss Pam Grier.
Right.
That's going to be the first episode out of the shoot in January. The second episode in January is going to be a look at Grindhouse. Finally, we're getting the Grindhouse episode done. One more thing we got to do.
Yep.
Before we get to the movie goodness, we got mail!
We do? We get mail?
We got two pieces of mail.
All right.
The first one is from Lee Bird.
Lee Bird, yeah.
Lee Bird. Lee Jason Bird. Hi, guys. My name is Lee Bird. I'm 23 years old. I'm a graphic designer, and I live in Bristol, UK, Southwest England.
Woo-woo!
Just finished listening to all the episodes of your podcast and find your take on movies refreshingly funny and interesting. It made me think of some questions I would like to ask you guys, like, what are your top five desert movies? Obviously, if DVD players and TVs could plug into palm trees.
Okay.
Me, in no specific order, Fight Club, High Fidelity, Heat, Rocky III, and Cube. Though I thought, what better to pose a question but to join your group? What better way to pose your question? Well,
first of all, thank you for your question.
And secondly, Lee, you obviously have good taste, having both High Fidelity, Fight Club, and Heat on your list.
I knew you were going to mention
You
High
know,
Fidelity.
High Fidelity is one of my top five favorite films.
I know.
But I think we should put this aside and make it its own episode.
Make it its own episode where we pick our five movies we would take to a desert island.
This is how you guys can influence the course of the show.
Yeah.
You join our mailing list, which Lee has done. You go to, let's see if I can remember this, films.yahoo.com/group/betterinthedark. Join up. The community is growing by drips and drabs every day. And we do ask your input. In fact, it's partially the input of the mailing list that prompted this episode today.
Exactly. Yep. That's how it came out. Thank you for that.
Welcome, Lee. We hope you enjoy your stay with us.
That's an interesting choice of movies he's got here, too.
Let's go now to the second one, which is a reference to the third episode in our Marvel at the Movies series. This is from Dave Anderson.
Hiya, Dave.
Good job, guys. One thing, I think you overlooked the Mutant X television series. It was fairly unwatchable, and I've never been clear as to its connection to the X-Men comics, other than it's about the New Mutants, which I never read. So you're not missing much there. Anyway, you guys have brought out a lot of fun and obscure stuff in your Marvel film series. Have you guys considered doing a series on DC films? You could fill 2 hours completely complaining about the horror that is Batman and Robin. Dave Anderson, associate editor, The Richfield Reaper. Well, Dave,
there's a number of points there.
Yeah. Well, which do you want to handle first? We can tell him, yes, there is a DC at the movies coming. We're going to start that in the summer with the Batman series to tie
and
in.
And I'm going to tell you right now, don't expect me to complain too much about Batman and Robin, because it's been 20 years since the damn movie was out. I get tired to keep hearing Joel Schumacher getting knocked over the head
right.
when he's a guy that's made an amazing amount
yes.
of good movies. So I'll just say that for now. We'll go into that in depth later.
We are doing DC at the movies, and as far as Mutant X is concerned, there's a reason we didn't mention it in the X-Men section of the Marvel movies.
Because it actually has nothing to do with it.
It has nothing to do with it. It's a weird case. It was basically...
It's got nothing to do with the New Mutants.
No.
It's got nothing to do with the X-Men.
Marvel sold the rights to the name Mutant X to an independent producer who created a show that had nothing whatsoever to do with the Marvel comic at all. Although, Marvel did release two specials based on the series. Yeah, you're right. It was pretty unwatchable. The most notable thing about that is it featured my favorite Lex Luthor of all, John Shea,
yeah.
and Victoria Pratt, who was mm-hmm. in Cleopatra 25,
right.
both of whom were people that I really
that I
enjoyed
liked too,
elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch it regularly, but if I was home on a Saturday and I was like cleaning up,
yeah.
I put it on as background.
And interestingly enough, the reason why that show only lasted two seasons was because 20th Century Fox sued Marvel. Said, wait a minute. You consciously sold another title that could confuse people with the title you sold us.
Which apparently Dave is one of those people.
Yeah.
It's no big deal, Dave, because a lot of people were confused
yeah.
about it. I was too until I got on the internet,
exactly.
did my research, and said, oh, it's got nothing to do with it.
And so Sony sued Marvel and got a cease and desist, and that's why Mutant X, which apparently was very successful.
There was a lot of people who were fans of
it. It had pretty good ratings, and it was doing very well.
So there's a little bit of information for you, Dave. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. And once again, if you want to try to send your own email so we can read on the air, you can do that by sending us an email to betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better, the letter N, thedark@gmail.com.
All the administrative stuff
is done.
The
presents have been given out. Now it's time to talk.
Talk about the movies.
The movies.
Action movies specifically that either take place on Christmas Eve or are centered around the Christmas holiday.
And we've got five we want to talk about today.
Yeah, so we're just going to run through them. We're going to be honest with you. Usually we have our cheat sheets ready.
Yeah.
We have this information at our fingers. But
we're going blind.
We're having fun today.
Solo.
We're just going to wing it. If we get anything wrong, we apologize
right.
in advance.
Well, shall we start with what I consider to be probably the most perfect American action movie ever made?
You and I think every other American, male or female, there's
right.
a number of women who love this movie. There's
yeah.
women who don't even like action
movies. Well, because it's kind of strong relational basis as well. We're talking, of course, about John McTiernan's Die Hard.
The original. The one that in itself created an entire subgenre
right.
of action movies.
How many films have you heard that were described as Die Hard on a trolley car? Die Hard on
America,
a monster truck?
Yeah,
yeah.
After a while it got to be ridiculous
yeah.
because it was every kind of situation that you could put it. There was even one weird one I remember with Ken Wall called The Taking of Beverly Hills.
Yes.
Where it was a whole gang that locked mm-hmm. off
yeah.
and Beverly Hills was going to rob it, and he was the only guy that could stop it. It got carried away for
yeah.
a while. But this is the first and still undoubtedly one of the finest, if not the finest example of American action
yes.
cinema.
You and I have talked about how superior John Woo's action films are. I would put this on a level with some of Woo's lesser films.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is equally as good as movies of his, such as Killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, The Killer has not aged well.
No, it really hasn't. I like it a lot,
yeah.
but if I had $50 million to remake a movie, I'd probably
yeah.
remake it. Which I keep hearing for years that Richard Gere and Denzel Washington, of all people, they were supposed to remake
right.
that.
Yeah, let's get back to Die Hard.
Die Hard, the movie that launched the career of
Bruce Willis,
who at that time, previously, was a television actor.
I mean, he had been in a couple of movies before then. You remember Blind Date?
Yeah, now that's a movie you could gouge your eyes out.
Yes.
Despite the cast.
Kim Basinger was one of the most smokingly hot people on the planet.
And John Larroquette, who's hilarious. He can make me laugh with just a look. Mm-hmm. And Bruce Willis had established himself as being a wonderful actor on the TV show Moonlighting with Sybil Shepherd.
This did not work, though, but Die Hard did, and it pretty much reinvented him as an action star.
Exactly. Whereas before he had been thought of as a light comedian. Right? Bruce Willis, an action movie? They couldn't see it.
So everybody knows the story by now. John McClane, New York City cop, is traveling to L.A. to spend Christmas with his estranged wife, played by Bonnie Bedelia.
He flies in on Christmas Eve.
And he finds himself in the middle of a complex but damn freaking clever plot to rob the company.
The Nakamura Corporation. Who is celebrating on Christmas Eve. They've just completed construction on this massive 100-story, high-tech, super complex tower. All the employees are there, and Mr. Nakamura and John McClane's wife. They're all in the penthouse on the top. Now, the building is taken over by a bunch of high-tech crooks led by
Alan Rickman. They're claiming to be terrorists at first, but that's all part of the plan.
They're actually just a bunch of high-tech crooks.
Well, there's that wonderful moment towards the end where Bonnie Bedelia goes, "You did all this just to rob us? You're a petty thief." And he goes, "No, I'm a damn good thief."
And he is.
"I wanted this to be professional. Efficient, adult, cooperative. Not a lot to ask. Alas, your Mr. Takagi did not see it that way, so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life."
But the brilliant part about it is that he realizes if he makes the cops and feds think that they're terrorists, they're going to react differently to the situation than if they're just thieves.
That's part of the reason why Die Hard is so perfect. The only person who's an idiot dies fairly early on.
The guy who... The PR guy.
The weasel who's smacking on Bonnie Bedelia.
Yeah. But everybody is pretty smart in this movie, especially John McClane.
Yeah.
Who, as a New York City policeman, nobody figures he has a chance against these well-armed terrorist, and he proceeds to just
pick them off
one by one and just mess their shit
up. And yet, John, even though he does things that could be considered kind of superheroic, he's never portrayed as larger than life.
No.
Quite the opposite, in fact. He's scared, he's freaked out, he's in pain through most of the film because his feet are bleeding.
Yeah,
because
he crawls around in a t-shirt and with bare feet. He's trying to get help. He's trying to make people believe.
And one of the closest relationships in the entire film is between two people who never meet face to face.
Until
the end of the movie.
Reginald Vell Johnson.
Right.
This was a career-making movie film because shortly after this, he got Family Matters.
There you go.
I mean, a lot of people's careers either got started or got jump-started from this movie. I love the wonderful scene where he's telling Reginald Vell Johnson that there's something going on. But then Alan Rickman's people, they cut into the communications and they said, you know, it's a prank. So what does he do? He ties a dead body to a chair, throws it out the window, and says, "Welcome to the party, pal."
Welcome to the party, pal.
It's like never once the audience asked to swallow something that they can't believe.
Exactly.
Which is a problem with a lot of action movies, especially later on in the 90s and these days, where action movies just become incredibly stupid.
Yeah. You put your finger on why Die Hard is still so popular today. It doesn't insult your intelligence. It's a smart action movie. Things happen in it that you can believe. It's not so over the top that we can't say, okay, that couldn't happen. The shootouts are excellent. Alexander Goodenough,
the former ballet dancer
of all things, plays a real badass in this movie.
Taking the Mr. Joshua role in this film.
Start to finish. And I mean, I don't see any reason why we need to.
I will go so far as to say that this and probably the next film we're talking about, because we're going to get to Die Hard 2 in a little bit, but I think that this film, the other film we're about to talk about, is a contemporary. These two together
define the action.
Define the action. You know which film I'm talking about.
For like a decade after that. You know, it defined what the action movie was going to be. And that movie is, of course,
Earth's Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Also taking place on Christmas.
Around the Christmas holiday.
And now here's something that, in my mind, is lost from most action movies, is that in this film, Richard Donner spends 40 minutes of its two-hour running time just getting to know our main characters.
The two main characters.
Comparing and contrasting Murtaugs and Riggs.
One, which is Roger Murtaugh, played by Danny Glover, who is close to retirement. He's right. a family man. He's got a wife. He's got three kids.
Right. There's a younger daughter and the older
one who gets a crush on
Right, who gets Martin a crush Rick. On Rick.
He's not looking to make any waves. He's mm-hmm. just looking to ride out his time
right.
until his retirement. And then he's partnered with Martin Riggs, played by, again, this is a movie that made him a star.
Who is closer, now that we know about yeah, Mel Gibson, what we know is about a lot Gibson. Closer to Mel Gibson than we thought.
Yeah. Who is a burnout case, frankly. He's alcoholic.
Yeah.
He's
depressed. You know how like so they talk about criminals wanting suicide by cop? Riggs is the opposite. He wants suicide by perp.
So he continually puts himself into these dangerous situations. Now, the thing about Riggs is that he's probably one of the most dangerous people in the world, in that he was in the army and comes out that he was in some
Black Phoenix.
Yeah, right. Some kind of group. He's a master marksman. He's a martial artist.
And we see how effective he is mm-hmm. in that early scene where there's the shooter in the schoolyard. And he goes out, steps out so he can get the guy's position, and then the next time, just shoots him down.
Yeah, just shoots a bang. But he's a guy who plainly is as much a danger to whoever he's partnered with as the criminals.
Everybody thinks I'm suicidal, in which case I'm fucked and nobody wants to work with me. Or they think I'm faking to draw a psycho pension, in which case I'm fucked and nobody wants to work with me. Basically, I'm fucked.
Which doesn't sit very well for Roger Bernthal, right. who envisions himself getting killed, if not by a criminal, his own partner. Yeah.
But the charm of this film is that Murtaugh accepts Riggs, and this whole story arc is where he basically builds a new family.
Yeah. It's actually, for all the shooting and the violence and the bloodletting and people getting thrown off roofs and incinerating, it's actually a very sweet relationship film between the two men as they learn how to trust each other and build a friendship.
Mm-hmm. We talked about people's careers being revitalized.
Mm-hmm.
It also features, much as Die Hard had Alan Rickman,
mm-hmm.
the main villain in Lethal Weapon isn't as good as Alan Rickman,
but
Lethal Weapon does have Mr. Joshua.
Endo here has forgotten more about dispensing pain than you and I will ever know.
Because Gary Busey was considered a has-been at that.
The main bad guy's played by Mitchell Ryan, but Mr. Joshua, that's the real...
And the thing that's clever is they established this prior relationship between Riggs and Joshua, so that even though Mitchell Ryan is the villain, de facto in the movie, Mr. Joshua is the real main villain.
Yeah, and it's a movie that's filled with wonderful stunts. I mean,
including, to the best of my knowledge, the first instance of a mixed martial arts fight in American cinema.
Yeah. The fight that he has
On the lawn, on Murtaugh's lawn between him and Joshua.
Uh-huh.
I watched it recently in preparation for this episode, and I realized that's a mixed martial arts fight.
Yeah.
He even uses a triangle choke to subdue him.
Yeah, he uses that Brazilian martial arts.
Yeah, capoeira.
And that's one of the things I like about this movie, in that you see that Riggs uses a lot of different martial arts, which makes you believe, this guy really is the badass he's supposed to be, because he just doesn't rely on one style. He switches up depending on who he's fighting, which is really, really excellent. This is one of my favorite.
Unlike Die Hard, if you think too hard about the plot, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It starts to go south with the kidnapping of the daughter.
Kidnapping of Tracy Wolf.
Yeah, and they're out in the desert, and he's got to snipe off the guys. And you start saying, okay, now, how did we get from there to here? I didn't really feel there was any need to put the daughter in jeopardy.
It seemed to be just to eat up time. Unlike Die Hard, where there's not a moment where you can get rid of.
Oh, no.
There is some fat on the
miscast. I wouldn't change a thing about Die Hard. There's a couple of scenes that you look at and you say, okay, well, I could do without this. But still, it's a damn good superior action compared to what we get nowadays.
It may not have started the buddy cop genre, but it definitely redefined it.
And everything we've got, even today, you've got K-ville, which is sort of in the same way of Lethal Weapon, that you have two mismatched cops put together. Mm-hmm. It's like Die Hard.
Although it's funny how many of these people who have tried to emulate Lethal Weapon, that's their answer to the movie, but they don't quite understand the question.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a film that you and I have talked about privately, Bad Boys 2, where it's obvious that they want to be Lethal Weapon so badly. And there are these brief glimpses where you realize that if they were given their own druthers, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence could be a good buddy cop team.
Yes, they could. What did we discuss before? If they want to make $1 million, do remakes of those Bob Hope being
Of course.
You know, Road to Hong Kong, Road to Singapore. That'd be perfect for them. And you could put a little action.
That's an episode that we're talking, which is like remakes we want to see. Because we spend so much time talking about remakes we don't want to see. if I ever owned a revival house, mm-hmm. every Christmas I would have Die Hard and Lethal Weapon on a double bill.
Yeah, I would. They are legitimate Christmas movies in that there's a Christmas motif.
There's even a moment of redemption for Riggs because he is literally attempting to commit suicide every night at the beginning of the film. At the end, he's got a family and he's happy with who he is.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve and yeah. he's invited to the house. The dog comes in and starts fighting with Riggs. You end up with a smile on your face because, okay, the guy's got hope now. He's not only...
There's that very significant scene at the very end where he finally says goodbye to Victoria, his dead wife, where he realizes it's time to move on. That's something that I know that the Lethal Weapon franchise has continued to try, the idea that you build your own family, but I don't think it's ever been as effective as in this first one.
No. I like all four of the movies. I think I like four a little bit better than you do. But I think we can both agree that three is probably the weakest.
Well, I think pretty much all of them after the first one, and God, I can't believe they're doing a fifth one.
But I saw an interview one time with Danny Glover when they were doing four, and that was the one with Chris Rock and Jet Li. And they asked him, how long you think you guys are going to do this? And he says, listen, he said, what can I tell you? Each one makes more money than the last. And the studio keeps saying, could you do another one? But I think it benefited a lot that, unlike a lot of movie franchises, they had the same people in every one and the same director.
Part of the problem with the later editions of Lethal Weapon is that they keep adding more stuff on. So in two we get frickin'
Joe Pesci.
I can't stand that character. I hated that character. And I also thought the two was just meaner and nastier. Leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
The South African guy. Well, you know that was the one that he actually died in that one. But the test audiences, they went berserk. They said, no, you can't kill off Riggs.
Then with three you get the She-Riggs in Rene Russo.
But going back to the theme of the theme of the whole series really is building your own family. So that's why they keep adding on quote-unquote family members.
Which is something that, because of the nature of my family, I certainly recognize. Anyway, we're getting away from our theme of this episode. We finished with Lethal Weapon.
We finished with Lethal Weapon.
But we're not finished with the Die Hard franchise.
No, we're not. Because the second movie...
Die Harder 2,
is also set on Christmas Eve.
Right.
Which led to, I think, one of the famous lines from the movie where John McClane says, how could the same shit happen to the same guy twice on the same night?
Oh, man, I can't fucking believe this. Another basement, another elevator. How could the same shit happen to the same guy twice?
This is the one that said... At the airport.
They switch it around. Now it's Bonnie Bedelia coming to the East Coast.
She's flying in on Christmas Eve to... visit with her husband.
I'm not as thrilled with this one as I was with the first one. I think part of it stems from the fact that it wasn't intended to be a Die Hard sequel originally.
No, it wasn't. It was a completely...
All the sequels were meant for other franchises. This one, in fact, Die Harder, I think was originally written as a Commando sequel. And it kind of shows, because if you remember Commando was the polar opposite of Die Hard.
Yeah.
In that... John Matrix is just Superman.
It's an enjoyable movie, but it's so completely over the top. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end, he kills like 1,000 guys who just are literally standing there while he machines guns them down, and they're not shooting them back.
Much like we mentioned with the second Lethal Weapon, it's kind of meanness to it.
Compared to Alan Rickman, this one doesn't really have any
villains. And also, to be fair, Rennie Harlan, who we're not through with yet in this episode, he's not that great a director. I think that he just lucked out, and in his early career, he happened to just follow good franchises.
Yeah.
So people would watch his stuff. And then once he started doing original things, like Cutthroat Island and the film we're about to discuss, The Long Kiss Goodnight, we started realizing how kind of crap he is. I'm not too thrilled with Die Harder 2.
I mean, I don't enjoy it as much as the first one, or even the third one, Die Harder, the one that was in New York. I like that one. This is an acceptable Saturday Night Action picture.
The third one isn't good.
You know what? It's really more like Lethal Weapon than a Die Hard movie, because you got these two mismatched characters together. He's not the low guy by himself. Right. He's got a sidekick.
And then, of course, with the most recent film, he's Superman now.
Did you see that one?
I have not seen that one yet.
Oh, you've got to see the sequence with Jet Plane. They've got one thing. It's a jet plane following him, and he jumps out of an 18-wheeler and jumps on the jet plane. He's not the ordinary guy now that we've come to love and know a fighting against impossible life.
But it's much like when we did that episode on the Halloween series where the first one was a trendsetter, and then it slowly, as the franchise progressed, it became a trend follower.
It's following other movies, unfortunately, that have these.
It's big, a Michael Bay picture.
Basically, yeah, it is. When you look at it, and you know what another thing I don't like about it? Other Die Hard movies, I mean, they were the template for 24 because they all took place in a 24-hour period. This one drags on through the 4th of July weekend. Right. And with John McClane going all up and down the East Coast looking for these.
And you know what the thing is also? Die Hard and Die Harder, and even Die Hard with a Vengeance, the plot is fairly small. They're complex, but they're fairly small. Alan Rickman wants a lot of money. Jeremy Irons, in the third one, wants revenge.
But he also wants money. He duplicates his brother's scheme because he makes New York think that it's a terrorist attack when actually he's trying to rob...
You know that was shot near where I used to work over in... It was then called the Continental Building on Water Street right near the South Street Seaport.
Okay.
In fact, the Magritte mural is still up there. Die Harder, like
but
I said.
But Die Hard too, but it's a Christmas movie.
Yes,
like
it
I said,
is.
It takes place on Christmas Eve. So.
And Rennie Harlan must have liked the idea of Christmas-themed action movies.
Yeah.
Because a couple of years later, after he got married to Gina Davis, came The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Again, co-starring Samuel L. Jackson.
See, you're assuming I won't shoot your sorry ass. And everyone knows when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you and umption.
Gina Davis plays... a housewife. She lives in Maine. And we know it's a Christmas movie because at first she's playing Mrs. Claus in Christmas Parade in the little Maine town that she lives in because, as we find out, she was found 5 years ago with no memory of who she was. But she was pregnant. So she moves to this town. She has a daughter and she's built up a life for herself as a school teacher. But in the meantime, she's hired these private detectives, including Samuel L. Jackson.
Who's kind of playing a sleazier version of his Shaft character.
He does. He plays a character who's a disgraced cop.
Yeah.
And of course, you figure he was set up. During the course of the movie, he admits, oh no, I did what they said. He said, but it was my partner that called him up and told him where the stuff was in my locker. And she said, well, did he put it there? He said, no, I put it there.
Right.
She said, I stole it. It's a little sleazier Samuel L. Jackson, but I like seeing him in this one because it's not like he's playing, as you say, Shaft or the cool-ass, badass that you've come to see. He's a guy...
He's not yet at that point where he's playing a parody of himself in every film he's in.
He's wearing checkered pants in all this movie, so that should tell you a little bit about how his character is played down. As it turns out, Jackson is good enough of a private eye to find out who she really is.
And we're kind of getting hints now because we see her doing a little slice and dice routine on the vegetables.
She has a car accident. And the car accident, of course, she has head trauma. And that starts to bring back her memory. She, all of a sudden, now she can juggle knives.
Yeah.
And a guy breaks into her house and tries to kill her. She takes him out. And she's like, well, how do I know how to do these things? And as we find out, that she's actually a government assassin.
The feared Charlie Baltimore.
Charlie Baltimore, who is tortured in a really brutal scene where she's tied to a water wheel.
Gotta wonder about the relationship during that marriage. That's all I can say, because it seemed like every film that the two of them did together, she got really brutalized.
They only did two. They only did this one in Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat Island bankrupted Carol. After that, nobody would touch him. And Robert Rodriguez, if you listen to this, take a hit before you insist on Rose McGowan in all of your movies.
Now, to be fair, Rose McGowan as Barbarella, to me, is really excellent casting.
Okay, but I'm just saying that take a hit sometimes is not so good when you want to...
But you know what I think, as good an actress as she is, one of the big flaws in this film is the fact that I never bought Gina Davis with the chipmunk cheeks and the dimples has Charlie Baltimore, super deadly assassin lady.
Come on, she's cute.
I just said she's wonderful. And she's a good actress.
It's a comic book. Yeah. That's what it is.
But unlike Bruce Willis, who successfully made that leap from being a light comic actor to being an action star, Rennie Harlan tried twice.
Well, they tried to make a Sigourney Weaver.
Not.
Oh, no, she's
not. Okay, you just brought a Sigourney. Try to imagine the same film with Sigourney Weaver in the role.
I could readily imagine her kicking every ass. Gina Davis. But, you know, it's a movie not meant to be taken seriously in the first place. You really can't look at it in that way.
It's also got that wacky, stupid Michael Bay physics who gives a crap about physics attitude.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they're running out of explosions.
Yeah, and the explosion picks them up.
They're surviving nuclear bombs.
You know, there's one time Samuel L. Jackson gets blown out of a window and about 500 yeah. feet and lands in the snow and gets up. Come on. I mean, that's why I said it's a comic book, because there's no reality to the underlying yeah. thing that you can look at and say, okay, well, I can see that happen.
For me, there was no real connection to mm-hmm. the film.
It's a big, sloppy, dumb action yeah. movie. But I do like the performances and the chemistry between Geena Davis and Samuel L. Jackson. I thought they made an effective team.
Yeah.
Again, we don't really have a real bad guy in this right. movie.
That was the other thing that bothered me about it. It just seemed to be running around for nothing.
And in these types of movies, see, that's what they realize about Die Hard. You gotta have a villain that really is a credible threat to right. be a good guy. In this movie, you know, and I saw this movie about like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you.
That's the thing. It's eminently forgettable.
Right. Yeah. I can't tell you a lot of what went on.
I can vaguely remember from it after watching it is people running away from explosions. That's all I can remember
and
about this
and Samuel L. Jackson yeah. yelling at each other yeah. a lot of times. Like I said, it's a big, dumb, sloppy action movie, but this is a Christmas movie, so that's yeah. why it's here.
We have one more film. It's a and film that I insisted on, admittedly.
This is a movie that he put a gun movie, to my head and said, we gotta do it. But I agree with him.
A movie that stars a great, great man.
Well, I don't know about that, but he's a wonderful
If we
actor.
Call Bruce Campbell a great, great man, we have to call Tim Thomerson a great, great man.
No, Bruce Campbell's a great, great man. This one is a great man.
All right.
He only
Mr.
has one great.
Tim Thomerson. And the film, of course, perhaps the greatest film ever done in the history of Charles Band, both during Empire releasing and Full Moon releasing,
mm-hmm.
the one, the only, Trancers, what? Which is a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is.
Tim Thomerson, well, we haven't aired that episode. That episode's going to air next week where we talk a little bit about his background.
Okay.
Former stand-up comedian, got his big break on a show called The Associates,
mm-hmm.
which also featured Shelley Hack and Martin Short. It was a short-lived comedy.
Mm-hmm.
He was famous for doing this slightly raunchy stand-up act, including the five-second distillation of The Searchers.
Oh, God.
Gonna tie him up, peck it to a tree, gonna tie him up, peck it to a tree. and he somehow fell bass ackward into this role as the go-to guy, as Charles Band's action hero.
Yeah.
He appeared in a lot, both in Empire and in Full Moon, these science fiction-based action movies.
Well, he did a whole shitload of them.
And he also had a somewhat of a fruitful partnership with the team of Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo.
Okay.
Perhaps best known for, to genre fans, as the guys behind the Flash TV series
right.
of the 90s. Prior to doing Trancers, he did a film called Zone Troopers,
yeah.
where he played Sergeant Rock, who just was, he was invertible. Nobody could hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
But then they made Trancers. Played, it was probably his signature role, the role of Jack Death. D-E-T-H.
Wonderful name.
Wonderful name. He is a cop in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Because California sinks into the sea.
Yeah, they had a big earthquake.
It falls into the sea. In fact, one of the early scenes in the film, he goes sea diving, looking for artifacts down
Which
in...
Which is, I think that was the scene they probably spent most of the special yeah. effects budget
oh,
on.
Yeah. His wife was killed by Whistler,
mm-hmm.
who runs a cult called the Trancers.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the film, he disposes of Whistler, but it turns out that Whistler was able to, in a weird way of time travel, where he basically goes down his genetic timeline, you know, reverse reincarnates
mm-hmm.
into another body in 1980s Los
in
Angeles.
His own ancestors.
Right. Body. The law council sends Jack Death back into his ancestor, who is a touchy-feely 80s kind of guy, who has just finished a one-night stand with Leela,
mm-hmm.
who is played by, now here's a name that we never thought we'd utter, Helen Hunt.
Ah.
This was her first role. She's like this punk rock chick, and she's got mm-hmm. this job at the mall as an elf for Santa. He's tracking down Whistler. Whistler, though, knows and has prepared him because he's created these Trancers. And the thing about Trancers is they have superhuman, they're like basically zombies.
Yeah.
Super powerful zombies, and they can kick your ass. In fact, one of the earliest action sequences, Jack Death gets his ass kicked by Santa Claus.
yeah. It's a funny thing about this movie. I remember it because when I got HBO,
yep.
this would be like one of those movies that they would run like every night, it seemed like at 2 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning, as they did with a lot of those
right.
Charles Band movies. This one was a good one.
It's great. Very much has a lot of scenes that are involving Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Like, of course, when they go hide out in the punk club and the punk rock band is playing a rather salacious version of Jingle Bells.
And it's not a movie that's stretched out. I mean,
it's 80 minutes long. It's less than 90 minutes. It does not stop.
Exactly. It's not a boring movie to watch. There's
and
no
Jack Death is such a great character. He's much like Rick Deckard in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
He's very, even though he's a from the future. He's very much of the 40s.
And because in fact, when he goes back...
The first thing he does, if you remember, is he gets the Brill Cream and starts rubbing it. And like Leela's going,
he gets to beat up.
What are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's like, I liked your hair that way. And he just says, dry hair's for squids.
Yeah, and he gets to beat up 40 trench coat.
The whole thing. I mean, there's a lot of like cool and exciting action sequences, like a motorcycle chase up and down the ducks of Los Angeles.
It's a movie that a lot of directors like Michael Bay could look at to know how to do an action
because
movie. And it doesn't have to be 8 hours long for you to do it.
Because you think this film must have been done on a budget of maybe $1 million at most.
At most, he missed because they probably didn't have any money to do any more. So it forced them to, we got to do exactly what we got to do and no more. For a lot of action movies, that's all you need.
This still retains a pretty heavy cult following to this
day. Oh, yeah.
I think there have been 6 sequels.
Yeah.
I'm not absolutely certain. Sadly, the sequel I wanted to see the most, which is the Bilson and DeMeo scripted before Empire Pictures went under, they were planning a movie called Pulse Pounders.
Okay.
And it was an anthology film which featured mini sequels to their most popular films.
Oh, okay.
So there was a Stuart Gordon, kind of like Reanimator sequel. There was a sequel to Dungeon Master, which is their other big franchise, and a sequel to Trancers, which featured Jack Death tracking Whistler down, and Whistler was apparently running like a hospital. He ended up getting committed. He had to try to explain to people that he really was from the future.
From the future.
They ended up doing it about 3 or 4 years later.
Didn't Tim Thomason have another podcast? Yeah. He said Doll Man, 6-inch high cop.
During the full moon day, Doll Man, where he played the tough cop who, when he came to Earth, was only 6 inches.
Was only 6 inches
high. And fought the disembodied head of Jackie Earl Haley. And in fact, Doll Man then crossed over with Evil Toys.
Right, I remember Doll Man versus Evil Toys.
The next time we saw Jack Death was about something like 5 or 6 years later, and it was over long. It was over 2 hours, way bloated.
Well, they had a bigger budget.
Everybody had to come back, including Art Modell. Not Art Modell. I'm trying to remember this guy's name. He's a great character actor. He's passed on since, who played Jack Death's boss. He goes back in time, and the only assistant available is a little girl. So there's like little blonde chickie cursing like a sailor is chasing after Jack Death saying, oh, you gotta get back in time. Gotta get back. The council needs to talk to you.
And which one is this?
So this is the first one. But they had all these characters come back and it was over bloated and it was boring and it was dull as all hell. And then they did a third one which was much shorter and much more interesting. Andrew Robinson played the villain in that one.
Oh, he's dependable, Andy.
Then
Robinson.
Peter David penned 2 episodes which were just god awful. 4 and 5, Jack of Swords and the Return of Jack Death.
Jack of Swords. Okay, I remember
that's
that
the one where he goes back in time.
Further in time
to medieval times.
Right. Okay.
And there's a most recent one because apparently Tim Thomason has had enough. There's one where Jack Death is reincarnated as Megan Ward, who's basically Charles Band's go-to girl whenever they need somebody.
Oh, okay. So, in other words,
it goes very bad very quickly, but first film is so amazingly cool.
I'm going to have to find that because I haven't seen it in a while, but it's one of those movies that I do remember vividly, probably.
Yeah.
Because whenever it came on HBO, I said, Trances. Let me watch it again.
And it just amazes me how integral Christmas is to this thing.
In all of these movies, I don't really think that you can have them or be as good as they are if you took out the Christmas element.
Right. Because how cool is it that Tim Thomas got beat up by Santa Claus?
Doesn't get much cooler than that.
To review, our recommendations for Christmas action films starts with, of course, the most perfect American action movie ever made.
Die Hard.
And its sequel, which isn't as good. Lethal Weapon, The Long Kiss Goodnight, and finally, Trances.
Now, this Christmas Eve, don't get A Christmas Story. Don't get It's a Wonderful Life, you know.
I got Trenches on my Netflix.
You've seen them already. You know what they're about.
Not that there's anything wrong with any of those films.
No, but for something a little bit differently, I don't think that you can invite people over and throw in The Long Kiss Goodnight. Most people, because they look at you like, what are you doing? But if you're an action movie fan, and if you want to be in a different sort of Christmas holiday spirit, pick up these movies, you know.
And maybe next year we'll do, like, Christmas horror films or something.
Oh, okay.
Do, like, different genres every year.
There's a lot of Christmas-themed horror movies as well that we were talking about before.
So
is that it for this one?
I think that's it for this one, except for, of course, the administrative stuff.
Okay.
If you want to drop us a line, as we mentioned earlier, please give us a email at betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better, the letter N, at gmail.com. You can always, of course, visit us at our Podomatic site and leave a comment. That Dave DeVos has been doing that a lot. Every episode, he always leaves a comment about what he thinks about it.
Thank you, Dave.
That website is betterinthedark.podomatic.com.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as we said, there's going to be some big news coming.
So stay tuned for that.
If you really want to get into a nice little community where people love movies and love talking about movies and has fun talking about movies, you can always join the Better in the Dark Yahoo mailing list, which is at films.yahoo.com/groups/betterinthedark. Like I said, this is the last episode that we're recording that will be broadcast in 2007.
Yep, the last one.
So
I guess we're going to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
We hope that whatever you wished for last year comes to you in 2008. And we thank you all so much for all the love and support and excitement that you've given us as we ventured off into this new realm.
We wish you nothing but blessings in the new year. And Tom, yep. I'd like to say thank you very much. This has been enjoyable. Nothing but fun.
I could not think of anybody I could possibly have done this with but you.
I'm looking forward to doing more this next year.
Oh, we're going to have so much fun.
This has been nothing but a blast.
This, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's time for, I guess, the ritual sign-off.
Yep.
No matter what you do, no matter where you go, no matter what film you go see, the most important thing to do is
go see that movie. Merry Christmas, Happy New
Feliz
Year.
Feliz Navidad, Kwanzaa, and all that other stuff. You've been listening to Better in the Dark, featuring Thomas DJ and Derek Ferguson. Special thanks go out to everyone and anyone who has listened to us, who took the time to give us input, and especially the members of the Better in the Dark Yahoo group at movies.groups.yahoo.com/group/betterinthedark. Better in the Dark is aware that Empire released Reanimated, but since it didn't produce the film, it doesn't count. Previous episodes for the show can be downloaded from betterinthedark.podomatic.com. Send all comments, praise, hate mail, and pipe bombs to betterinthedark@gmail.com. That's better, the letter N, thedark@gmail.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Better in the Dark is a Conspiracy Productions presentation. All material copyright, Thomas DJ and Derek Ferguson. Until next time, remember that if you suddenly find out you can juggle knives, it's time to start practicing your running skills stat.
I'm always frank and earnest with women. In New York, I'm frank. In Chicago, I'm earnest.
Let's do what one shepherd said to the other shepherd.
What?
Let's get the flock out of here.